The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Mindfulness of thinking, awareness of thinking. You know, thinking is something that, it happens in our meditation, have you noticed? And often we have a kind of a contentious relationship with thinking in our meditation. Some of that, I think, comes from certain practices that we do in meditation. Certain practices, we are cultivating a still mind, we're cultivating concentration, we're cultivating stability of mind. And in those practices, we tend to pick one experience, like the breath. And whenever anything arises that's not the breath, whether it's a sound or a body sensation or a thought, we have the intention to let that go and return to the breath. Now, even in this kind of practice, it's in this kind of a practice where we're cultivating stillness and cultivating the settling of the mind, we do that in, it's kind of an Aikido move with the thoughts. You know, we don't have a shoot and destroy kind of attitude with the thought, or it's helpful, I found, not to have a shoot and destroy attitude with the thoughts, but rather more of a, oh, there's a thought and we're going to come over here, you know, so that it's not an aversive kind of attitude in the settling of the mind, because that settling of the mind actually comes from letting go as opposed to trying to control. So even in concentration practice, having a skillful relationship with the thinking mind is helpful. In mindfulness practice, we're a different kind of meditation practice. We do often cultivate a stability of mind in mindfulness practice by staying with the breath at the beginning. And yet, mindfulness practice is about, ultimately, about opening to the flow of our experience. Whatever's happening in our experience, learning how to be aware of that. Thoughts included. And this is a great possibility. I mean, people often have this idea that it's not possible to be mindful or aware of thinking while it's happening. That inherently thinking means that you're not aware. And thank goodness that that's actually not true, because in our daily lives, we do have to think to navigate our lives. And there is this possibility of bringing awareness to all areas of our life, all areas of our experience. And so exploring the possibility and cultivating the interest and the capacity to be mindful of thinking, aware of thinking, in a formal sitting practice will support us in going into our daily lives and being able to navigate all of the stream of thoughts and ideas and views and opinions that happen in our daily lives. So I'd like to speak about this today from, well, we'll see how many different perspectives I come through. As usual, I like this kind of, this group in the morning to be conversational. So as I'm speaking, if you have questions, please raise your hand. I may just give you a wait a moment signal if I'm, you know, finishing a thought or something. But I will, I'm open to questions during the talk in this group. So there's a couple perspectives I'm interested in exploring today. One is just first simply, what does it mean to be aware of thoughts and how might we explore that? How might we do that? That's kind of the first topic I'd like to look at. And then a second topic is recognizing that there are different kinds of thoughts, and some thoughts may be not so helpful in our meditation, but other thoughts may actually be helpful. So looking at skillful and unskillful thoughts, so a little bit about looking at the content and seeing whether, you know, some thoughts actually can be helpful for us in meditation. So that's another perspective. And then the third perspective is actually consciously using thoughts in meditation at times. And, you know, this may be this week, and not next week, I'll be teaching another retreat next week, but the following week we may talk about this topic, you know, from these various perspectives. So, awareness of thinking. One of the keys around awareness of thinking is that we need to get familiar with, become aware of the difference between being caught in our thinking or following along with our thinking and being aware that a thought is simply something that's happening here and now in our experience. That's a very, it's a key distinction. In following along with the thinking, we're often going along with the narrative, following the story. It's almost like we are born into a thought bubble, you know, that we're living in the world that's been created by our thoughts for even a few moments. Just, you know, a memory arises about an old relationship, and we're kind of wandering around in our minds in the field of that old relationship, and it's kind of like we're living in it again. And then we come out of that, and it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm not even in that relationship anymore. Why am I having a conversation with them, you know? So the being lost in our thoughts that way, I think that's some of the reason why we have a conflicted relationship with thinking in our meditation, because thoughts often have that power to delude us, to create this alternate reality, essentially a kind of an alternate reality that we live in and are unaware of either the living in it or what else is going on in that moment in our lives. And so this is the distinction that's really helpful to get familiar with. The distinction between kind of following the narrative of thought and being aware of it just as, oh, this is an experience that's happening right now. This thought about this old relationship is a phenomenon that's happening right now in this moment. It's just a neuronal blip, or two, or three, or ten. So there's a vast difference between these two, because when we are not so aware of thinking, when we're caught in that narrative and we're not consciously aware that thinking is happening in the present moment but are lost in that world, the habits of mind, our often reactivity, our familiar patterns of responding and reacting to the world are often in play in that. You know, if you just think about the kinds of ways you get lost in thought, often they come along with habitual patterns of frustration or irritation or wanting or excitement or confusion or pick your favorite mind state. So when we are lost in thought, the habitual tendencies of mind are kind of running the show. You know, we're not consciously making our decisions here and now, but our habits of mind, our tendencies of mind that we've cultivated from the past are kind of in charge and making our choices for us, deciding what we'll do, what we'll say, how we'll react. So our habits are kind of in charge when we're not consciously aware. And when we become aware, when we can wake up into thoughts and recognize this is an experience happening right now, there's at least the opportunity for some degree of conscious choice, some degree of recognition, oh, this is just a thought. Maybe I don't have to let the mood or emotion that's been generated, connected with that thought, spill out into the world. So one of the best places to begin to get familiar with this difference is in our meditation practice, the moment when we notice that we have been lost in thought, we're waking up into, oh, I'm back, that kind of feeling. I know you're all aware and familiar of that experience. You know, you're meditating along, paying attention to the breath or sound or body sensation, and, you know, a car goes by and the mind gets in that car and is going to San Francisco, and then we're in San Francisco and we're in that thought bubble, and then poof, we wake up. And in that moment when we wake up and recognize we're not in San Francisco, but we're actually sitting here in Redwood City in a meditation hall with our eyes closed, in that moment, often our relationship to that moment is something like, bad meditator. shouldn't be doing that. Come back to the breath. Something like that. You know, often that's our relationship to that moment. And what I'd like to propose is, in that moment when you have woken up into that thought, that is the perfect time to begin to get familiar with this distinction of what it's like when we're lost and in that world, and what it's like to be aware that that is a thought happening in the present moment. Because often when we wake up, not always, but often when we wake up, we are waking up into thought. You know, it's we become aware in some kind of subtle way, oh, thinking about San Francisco, not in Redwood City, not, oh, breath, okay. There's a few moments where we've actually woken up into thought. And so that moment of coming back into mindfulness again is a great opportunity to begin to get familiar with that difference between lost in thought, which isn't something we're necessarily consciously aware of as it's happening, but in the moment when we wake up, there can be a lingering sense of what it was like to be lost in that world. Just the checked out nature of it's dreamlike nature of that experience. So there's a kind of a lingering sense of that, dreamlike nature of that experience. And then the contrast between that and being here, knowing that you're sitting here, and even maybe having a taste for a split second of aware in that moment that this is just a thought happening in the present moment. It's just a thought arising in the mind. It's not a reality in that moment. Thoughts are amazingly, have an amazingly delusive capacity to them. It's not necessary for them to have that delusion, but they have a very strong pull in that direction of having us believe their reality. And we, in that being pulled into that reality, we often find ourselves responding and reacting to the things that our mind has created in that reality. And when we wake up, we are the inheritors of that delusion. You know, in the moment when we wake up, we will be living in the state that was created for at least a few moments, and sometimes longer, depending on the kind of thought that it is. I mean, if you wake up into having an argument with your boss, that reality that was created may have quite an impact on your present moment experience. You may find there is remnants in experience of anger, frustration, pounding heart, sweaty palms, fast breath, here and now, because of thought. This is amazing. You know, this is amazing what the power that thought has. And one of the things I'm hoping to encourage today is not so much to hate that fact, because it happens for all of us, but to begin to wake up to this, that this is the way our minds work. As we begin to wake up to this, as we begin to recognize how, one of the things that, like in that situation, waking up into an argument with someone and feeling the impact it has on you here and now, we begin to see just how at the mercy, in a way, we are of these thoughts that are flowing through us when we're not conscious of them. When we are more able to be aware of the thoughts, first of all, in that waking up into that situation, what might be helpful there? First, rather than having the sense of, oh, waking up into argument, come back to the breath, I mean, that state that it's created in you is pretty potent, or can be potent if you've gotten into a kind of a strong pull into some kind of a emotional terrain in your thoughts. And so rather than having that be, oh, put that aside and what am I doing now? I'm supposed to be paying attention to breathing. Well, in mindfulness practice, we wake up to what's happening here and now. And so thinking has been happening. It's created a response in the body and mind. It's had an impact on the body and mind. And so that would be the very thing to recognize. That would be the very thing to explore in that moment. How is it, having woken up, having been thinking that thought? How does it make the body feel? What emotions are present? Confusion, anger, frustration, irritation. And how is it here and now? So to take some time whenever, this is another very powerful tool in working with thoughts, waking up into thoughts. Again, not having stop the thought, come back to something else, but rather waking up to, how has that thought impacted me? And taking some time to recognize that, to be with that. We don't have an agenda. We don't have to have an agenda that the breath is better than anything else. But the cultivation of this capacity to be aware of the state that has arisen in you as a result of that thinking, that will be powerful for you. That will be helpful for you. And that's one way that this exploration of thinking will help to carry into daily life. If you can open into the state that is happening as a result of thinking, and get familiar with how to be present for those states. And I'll talk about that in just a few moments, of what that means to be present for what the body and mind are experiencing as a result of thinking. If you can be interested in that and curious about that, it will, that will begin to be a tool that will serve you as you are dealing with this kind of thing in your daily lives. Yeah, a question over here.
So I try that sometimes when I notice I'm thinking.
It's on, yeah.
And I sometimes I notice body sensations, whether it's tightness or heartbeat or... A lot of times I'm not sure if those sensations were already there.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not necessary to know whether they were there or not.
Okay.
It's just like you've woken up into thinking to necessarily say, oh, well, these sensations are because of the thought, and I don't know about those sensations. Just be with what's here, whatever it is, and just recognize perhaps emotions that are present or body sensations that are present. And you don't have to know, you don't have to actually, you know, pick out which ones were related. Over time, as the mindfulness gets more strong, as the mindfulness strengthens, it begins to make those cause and effect links. It begins to understand. But, you know, we can't think it through. It's more that the cause and effect is revealed because the mindfulness is seeing the cause and effect. And so you're just waking up into something. You're waking up into the experience, and what is it here and now? So just taking that moment to just, oh, okay, having been thinking, what's happening here? Yeah, and over here. And would you use the mic too?
I find it's also helpful to identify what the thought is in that, whether it is judgment or is it a memory? Is it fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
What am I leaving out?
Planning.
Planning. I'm leaving out the one that is usually what. Planning, which generally I find causes a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And just making that connection. If I can identify what it is I'm doing, it's generally connected to how I'm feeling.
Yes. Yes, and there is that. There's a two-way street there that's kind of interesting to explore. Sometimes there's the anxiety that's happening, and the thoughts are going to come out of the anxiety. Sometimes the thoughts happen, and they trigger an emotional response. And so, I think I'll talk a little bit about the various tools for working with thought. And this is one of them, this noticing, recognizing the type of thinking that's happening. So, I had a list here. Planning, remembering, judging, fantasizing, describing is another one that happens. Wandering, dreaming, daydreaming, having a conversation, so conversing or arguing. We all have our own kind of familiar patterns. And so this is noticing a little bit about the content. So it's recognizing the kind of the type of thinking, but it's categorizing it. It's rather than being involved in the specifics of that, it's beginning to recognize, oh yeah, that's planning again, or that's describing again, that's fantasizing again. You know, you may have many kinds of fantasies. You may be on the beach in Tahiti one time, or you may be in a rave at a club in San Francisco at another time. I mean, there's all kinds of fantasies that the mind can produce. So, you know, but to just recognize, rather than the specifics, get interested in, oh, it's that kind of thing again. So recognizing the category, essentially, of thinking, that helps us to begin to recognize patterns in our thoughts. Probably there's going to be some, you know, top three patterns, as you mentioned. Okay, planning, that's a top pattern for you, one that happens a lot. So you may begin to see patterns in your thinking. So this begins to help us to understand something about our own minds. Where does this mind tend to get caught? And also, as you pointed out, often in habitual kinds of thinking, there's something going on. If it's a type of thinking that recurs a lot, you know, fantasy, for instance. If fantasy occurs a lot, that might be a kind of a subtle kind of a don't like what's here, let's create something pleasant in the mind. So a subtle kind of either boredom or aversion happening in the present moment, and the mind just goes into let's go someplace pleasant, let's check out. You know, it's almost a strategy that we've learned in our lives how to not deal with things. So when we have our habitual kind of patterns, when we get familiar with the ones that come up a lot for us, then we can begin to look a little bit more closely. What's happening there? You know, okay, it's planning again. Anxiety is often connected with planning. And just kind of checking into that. Yeah, so, Arthur.
So, a question about some clarity with something. So, what you're describing, you were describing it related to sitting on the cushion and meditating, and there's time, and that's what we're here for, to stop and think about what just happened, or what is happening, or what just happened is doing to me now. But I find more and more, as I'm going about my day, I suddenly have these moments of, I can't believe I just did that or said that. What's going on here?
Uh-huh.
But they, you know, it's like there's a wave of everything else that's happening, and it disappears. So I guess the question is cultivating that waking up, that moment of waking up, away from the meditation hall.
Yeah, yeah, that's a whole talk, actually. And I'll just say a couple words here, and then I may table that one for next time. Because the tools, I mean, partly the tools that we learn in our meditation can begin to carry into our daily lives. And so kind of like we have to do the practice here, you know, it's like, you know, learning, I use this analogy sometimes, learning to play basketball, you know, that you're not going to learn to play basketball by putting yourself into the middle of an NBA game and, you know, you'll get run over. But you can learn to play basketball by doing drills, by getting some friends, you know, you practice the moves. And kind of what we're doing here is practicing the moves of working with thoughts in our sitting practice. So we practice it here on the cushion, and then it begins to carry into daily life. And, you know, there's a whole art to practice in daily life where we recognize, it's kind of like do the best you can, you know, recognize the tenor of the mind. I often like to suggest the broadest kind of awareness there. You know, it's like, you know, the mind was caught up into some distortion of some kind, some fantasy or argument or something, and waking up and you're in the midst of doing something, you know, there's a whole lot happening. It's like, oh, here I am again. And just the question, and what's that impact? You know, what? How is it? Tension or ease? You know, you may actually find at times waking up into thoughts, and this is a little carrot for you because this happens more often than I realized until I started really paying attention to that moment of waking up. We assume that being lost in thought is inherently, you know, going to be agitating or making us tense or tight, but more often than I expected, what I see in the moment of waking up is that actually I'm more settled, I'm more calm, I'm more at ease. And if I've got the idea that, oh, bad meditator, you know, that's going to agitate it immediately. And so waking up into what's happening, there may be tension, tightness, contraction, emotion. There could also be calm, ease, peace, a little bit of balance of mind present. And so just taking in that moment of waking up into daily life, just taking in kind of the overall tenor. How are you in that moment, having woken up into that thought? And then, you know, in daily life, I often say, just get on with your day. You know, don't try to hold on to that agenda of mindfulness in that moment. You may be able to see a little bit there of, you know, how it's kind of orienting you to see things like if anger has arisen in your mind, you might wake up and realize, oh, I don't like that, and I don't like that. So you may see that it's kind of impacting your present moment experience, and that awareness will it itself help. So I think I'll just stop there and carry that one into the next conversation. Let me just say a few more things about this working with the category of thinking. So a couple more pieces that can be interesting to explore there are, who's the audience? You know, who are we talking to? Sometimes we have an audience, sometimes it's just we're talking to ourselves, but that can be an interesting piece of the exploration. I was in this retreat that I was just teaching, one of the teachers used an interesting phrase that I kind of like. He says, in exploring thinking, we're exploring not the content of what we're thinking, but the contour of the thoughts. And there's several pieces of that contour, one of which is the category, so what kind of thinking it is. One of it is the audience, you know. That's another part of the contour. You know, we've created some situation. We may be having a conversation in our mind with our boss, or we may be talking to our mom or our one of our kids. You know, there may be an orientation of an identity, a self and other, in the thought itself. So acknowledging that, recognizing, sometimes it creates like a sense of me as the mom, or me as the daughter, or me as the employee, or me as the teacher, or whatever. You know, it can sometimes create that sense because of a particular kind of thought. So recognizing something about the audience there can be interesting. Whose voice is it in? Who's talking? Could be yours, might be, you know, your dad's voice. It might be, just checking in. Whose voice is it in? So.
I have this sense, and I wonder if there's any scientific evidence to support it, that one's ability to think about being in San Francisco when we're here and one's ability to recognize being here are pretty much the same physiological processes in the brain.
I don't know if it's the same physiological processes in the brain. I do know that it's really helpful to know the difference. I mean, in the experience of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it strikes me that if they were similar, very similar, that there's one less reason to feel conflicted about what you're doing.
Uh-huh, yeah. I think that the key really is around, is delusion present or is delusion not present? If delusion is present, the delusion is tending to make us kind of believing the reality of the thought. That's the key difference. I think the thinking itself is probably pretty much the same, but the delusion, the process of delusion, it's actually, delusion's a separate process. And, we can be deluded about many things, not just thought. So when delusion is present, we tend to get lost into that reality. And so that's essentially, I think, you know, when I say notice the difference between the two, what I'm pointing to is noticing when delusion is present and when delusion is not present. And we can actually begin to getting a sense of that, what that delusion is like. Initially, you know, it's like we can't at all be aware of delusion because we're deluded, you know. But there are times we wake up into delusion, and we begin to get that taste of what that's like. We see the delusion fall away, and in seeing that, being clear of that difference, then we can begin to recognize, wow, I am really caught by this anger right now. There's that filter of anger working right now. I can see that everything that I look at, I am oriented towards the unpleasant. I am oriented towards what I don't like in this room right now. And that's the anger filter working, and there's delusion there. So, you know, that we can know because we've seen it kind of fall away and we've gotten familiar with how our minds work, we can begin to recognize, oh, this is delusion operating. We may not be able to say, delusion be gone, but we can know, yep, this mind is working through this filter right now. And the delusion operates as filters. You know, we see through things as filters. And so we can begin to recognize that. And there's many, many layers of those filters. So we see through certain layers, and then we think, oh, things are pretty clear now. And then we begin to see there's even subtler layers of those filters operating. There's so many different layers of the way our delusion works. But this isn't a talk on delusion. this is a talk on, you know, essentially... well, in a way, it could be a talk on how we are caught by the delusion in the thinking process in particular. It seems to be a very potent place where delusion has a doorway in. You know, it's like when we start thinking, that doorway of delusion just has a really wide room to enter. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about working with the emotional side of things. So often when there's a repetitive pattern of thinking, it's related to some kind of emotion. And this is where that cycle often is in play, a cycle between emotions and thoughts and emotions. So for instance, we might be minding our own business, driving down the freeway, and then we see something, see a car that reminds us of an old partner's car. And, whew, there's the sight of the car, there's the memory. My partner used to drive a car like that. And then there's thinking about the partner and the anger of whatever happened between you, and you're off. Doorway. Delusion entered that doorway. So from just driving down the freeway, no particular emotional charge, an emotion charge has been created because of the thought process. Then, if we're not mindful, if we don't wake up into that, that emotion can kind of get, whipped up. And often the whipping up process happens by more thoughts. So we've gotten a little bit angry, but then we start thinking about that situation and, what that person did to us and how they did it and the other people who are involved. And then maybe our mind slips off to another person. And, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm angry at that person too. And that person shouldn't have done that. And what about that person? And soon we've got a whole population of people we're angry with in our minds, thinking about them. And the anger is building. So that's a case where the emotion itself, so we started from just kind of neutral, seeing something in the world, and thought created an emotion, and then emotion itself can generate thoughts. So when we get into a state of a particular emotion, when delusion is present, it will tend to generate thoughts in line with that emotion. So, angry thoughts. Angry thoughts tend to generate more anger. So we get a kind of a cyclic process. So emotions can arise from thought, and thoughts can arise from emotion. It's a two-way street. When there is an emotion present, and in these habitual patterns, the ones that are our favorites, really helpful when you notice, okay, yep, this is one of my favorites, okay, planning. In that, recognizing, yep, this is one of my favorites, acknowledging the emotion that's connected with that. And as you mentioned, anxiety often. Okay, so yep, anxiety. There is anxiety present. And how might it be possible to actually meet the anxiety? Might it be possible to acknowledge the anxiety, feel it in the body? Again, this is the impact. How has this thought impacted me? It's generated this emotion, and that emotion then generates bodily experience, churning in the stomach, or fluttering, or kind of contraction in the throat. Often emotions do have an impact on the body, and turning towards the body when there is that thought triggering an emotion, it does a couple of things. First of all, it keeps us in the present moment. It keeps us here and now with what is happening here and now. And it also cuts that feedback loop between thoughts and emotions. So it's like we attend to the experience of the emotion, and because we're attending to the experience of the emotion, there's not as much opportunity for that emotion to be in its thought-producing factory mode, so that taking the factory offline, you know, taking the thought factory offline there by being with the emotion. You know, first of all, sometimes those emotions are kind of sending up thoughts as flares. You know, it's like sometimes I find that when there's a strong emotion present, that the thoughts are trying to get my attention. And when I actually turn to the emotion, it's like, well, finally, you're finally paying attention to me. Okay, you know, and when that emotion is met, it's like, you know, it's like a kid who's sitting there saying, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. And when we turn to meet it, it's acknowledged, it feels met in a way, and it can begin to live its life. We feel through it, and it too is another, it's a phenomenon that's happening. It will have its life, it will fade, it will pass away. Our strong emotions tend to be, it's like there's a mechanism in our mind and body. I think it's hormonal, you know, the hormone system. And when an emotion comes up, it's like release of hormones through the system. And it's almost like the thoughts that are associated with that in the kind of the cyclic spiral way is like the thoughts are like pushing that hormone button over and over again. So it kind of keeps us caught in the loop of that emotion. If we can be with the emotion and not have the thoughts pushing the hormone button, the flood of experience, physical, emotional experience, will go through the body and pass. There's one, some of you may be familiar with the book called My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolte Taylor. She's a neurobiologist who had a stroke, and I won't describe that whole story. It's a great story. I highly recommend the book, actually. But there's a place in there where, as a neurobiologist, she's talking about just this very kind of cycle, this loop of emotion and reaction that was happening for her in her recovery. And knowing something about the biology, the neurobiology of the brain, she knew, she said, you know, when that flood of hormones goes through the system, it will last about 90 seconds. And if you can kind of not push the button again, all it takes is 90 seconds for that to pass through. So it's a challenge to not push that button again, I have to say, you know, because in being with the experience, often there's this little flare of, oh, but they shouldn't have done that. Oh, okay, there, push the button again. Okay, can I hang out with it for 90 seconds? So sometimes just knowing that 90-second information can help us to meet, you know, to meet these feelings. You know, it's just a flooding of hormones through our body. That's what's happening in an emotion. It's a present moment phenomenon. And mindfulness can help us allow it to wash through without reigniting it, re-triggering it. So turning our attention to the experience. When I first heard that instruction, it's like, well, what good is that going to do? And it is incredibly helpful. It is very powerful to witness these emotional responses. That 90-second rule. Let's see which of these many things. Oh, I think I will talk a little bit about what to do when it feels like it's not at all possible, you know, to navigate things with just mindfulness. You know, that there's the thought is so strong, the thinking is so strong that we don't seem to be able to enter in and just be with the feeling. So there's a couple of explorations we can make here. One is just, again, reminding ourselves we're not trying to get rid of thought. And in a way, what we're seeing in that kind of a situation, so reminding ourselves actually what's happening here, if you could choose, I mean, often with this kind of experience, we feel somewhat tortured. You know, I wish I could stop this, but I can't. I'm just caught in this cycle of anger, and I can't turn it off. It's interesting to remind ourselves that sometimes we don't have control of our minds. That this is actually a manifestation of the teaching the Buddha offered on not self. I won't try to go into that in a lot of detail here, but essentially, the teaching on not self is the Buddha points to the fact that we don't have control as an indication or evidence for the not self nature of our experience. That if we did have control, you know, if it's like the way he puts it, well, if my consciousness were self, I would be able to say of my consciousness, may my consciousness be thus, may my consciousness not be thus. But consciousness is not self, and so I can't do that. So sometimes we can't say, may I stop thinking these thoughts? It just doesn't happen. We can't even, with the intention of turning towards the body, let go of the thoughts and come into a physicality of experience. Sometimes that is what's happening in our minds. So when thoughts are powerful like that, and they are in the terrain of these kind of what I'll call unskillful thoughts, unwholesome thoughts, thoughts that are torturing us, thoughts that are keeping us caught in negativity, negative emotion, or caught in desire and confusion. A couple of tools for this. It's actively, what I've been exploring mostly here so far is how do we open to the terrain that has been created by the world of thinking. And if you can do that, great. That's the place to begin. If you can't do that, then you may need to do some active things to kind of consciously turn your mind away from those thoughts, replace those thoughts. I mean, one thing that does seem to be true is that we can't think two thoughts at the same time. So if you can put other thoughts into your mind, sometimes that can be helpful. The classic exploration of this, one of the classic teachings around this is, for instance, if anger is arising in the mind towards somebody, replace that with, and this is if you can't be mindful of it, you know, if you can't just open to the feelings and be with it, if it's catching you. The Buddha actually offers a series of things, and one of the first things he says is, replace that thought with other thoughts. And so with anger, for instance, the classic antidote. The classic antidote in terms of replacing the thoughts is to put thoughts of goodwill into the mind. So consciously think thoughts of goodwill towards that person. So, you know, and it could manifest as thoughts of compassion as well, you know, reminding yourself, for instance, well, this person may be doing that. I don't know what's happening for them. Maybe they're really struggling right now. You know, so just bringing in thoughts of well-wishing for that person. That, so that you just, that's one exploration. Replace the thought with other thoughts. For myself, that particular switch from anger to metta That was a hard one. That one didn't work very well for me. Replacing thoughts in that way wasn't so helpful. But sometimes I could put some other kind of thought into my mind, like just distract my mind by, okay, you know, some kind of neutral, innocuous kind of thought, like, you know, one I used to kind of help my mind stop being stuck in a pattern was to put the thought of Winnie the Pooh in my mind. It's kind of more of a neutral kind of thought, you know. For me, it wasn't like it was like a really pleasant thought, or, you know. So it's kind of an in between. The movement from anger to metta was too big of a leap for my mind when it was really caught, but it might be able to kind of go to something in the middle. So it's kind of almost like a skillful replacement of thought, you know, just putting a different thought into the mind. Another thing the Buddha suggests is attending to the drawbacks of the way that you're thinking. You know, consciously recognize this is not helpful. You know, just bringing that into your mind. These angry thoughts are making there be more anger in my mind and body. It's not a pleasant place to live. So that's another thought. Oh, and I'll just give one more quick one because it's time to stop. The other is actively turning the attention away from the whole complex of the emotion and thoughts. So this is kind of like replacing the thoughts, but it's not so much using thought. For me, what I did here was I would, like, when anger came up, and I was finding I couldn't be with the anger. It was too potent for me. Rather than replacing it with a thought, I replaced it with some other experience that was really remote from the feeling of anger, like feet contacting the ground. There wasn't a lot of association of the feelings of anger with the feet on the ground. So you can just notice the contact, notice the feeling there. So kind of a redirecting of the attention. A skillful saying, okay, I see you. It's really important with this tool to not have it be out of aversion and not have it be bad thought repression, but just, okay, I see you, and I'm going to put my attention over here. So using almost the and in your mind, yep, you can stay there, and I'm going to put my attention on feet on the ground. And I need to stop. Time to stop. So I will continue this thread of conversation in a couple of weeks. Thank you for your attention and your